Welcome to Forks and Corks, a podcast featuring some of the best of Napa Valley for foodies and wine lovers alike. I'm Candace Ludlow, your host. Today you're in for a treat. We're headed to Coombsville, a sub-appellation of the Napa Valley. The Reynolds Family Winery is a small producer of high-end wines, reds primarily. This boutique winery is into doing things by hand, like dipping the tops of special bottles into red wax, and then adding their family crest to each before delivery. The winery is located atop a windy driveway off the Silverado Trail, just north of Napa. The facility is small, the tasting room, crush, and bottling all happen in one tall building. The warehouse, adobe-type structure, has mustard-colored stucco walls and a pitched tin roof. The tasting room is warm and welcoming, and all the winemaking happens on the other side of the wall. That's where the tanks and barrels are.
So that physical winery opened in 99.
That's owner and winemaker Steve Reynolds.
We bought the property, actually went into escrow before we were actually married. Planted the grapes in 95, and then the 4 years, you know, it takes about 4 years to get your first vintage. And our first commercial vintage was 1999.
He and his wife, Susie, decided to put rootstock down in Coombsville.
Well, when Susie and I got into this industry, and we started playing around with having a wine label, and we thought, why would anyone ever walk into a store and pick up a bottle of Reynolds when there's Duckhorn, Rombauer, all these famous brands that were very recognizable. So we had to do something different that would stand out, that would be unique. And we'd seen this greeting card in a store that had this handmade flower that was pressed into homemade paper, and thought, you know, it was just so cool, just so simple and elegant. So we thought, what if we did that on a bottle of wine? What if we actually went out and picked mustard from our vineyard? Because mustard does grow wild out in the vineyards. It's beautiful in January and February. It's a fresh crop every year, the start of a new year. Had all these great little underlying tones and stories for us. So we thought, let's go pick the actual mustard flowers from our vineyard right underneath our grapes. And let's put a mustard flower in every bottle, hand make them. So when we got to a store and people would come in and see this, they'd go, is that a real flower? Is that something, you know, is that really that handmade? So they would maybe think, wow, this is something has to get in the shopping cart, go home. Because we knew once they would taste the wines, they would like it.
Steve and Susie have since moved away from putting individual mustard flowers on each bottle. Instead, they've commissioned a scientific drawing of the yellow beauty. Let's go into the area where the wines are made. Steve takes us through the back door of the tasting room. The ceilings are two stories high. The floor is cement for easy cleaning. Barrels are stacked. There's a handful of cellar workers cleaning and working the tanks. Steve's son Cameron is dipping the tops of the Steadfast Cab into red wax, placing plastic sleeves over the tops, then gently sliding them into special black ammunition wine boxes. This is where art, science, and tradition intertwine.
Handcrafted for sure. Respect to Mother Nature, of course, not getting in the way of what she wants to do, but sometimes she herself might need a little helping hand in a bad year. You know, with wines, I started to notice within the first couple of years, not every year's as good as the last year or, you know, some of the bad years. So I decided I would try to learn every trick I could. I noticed when I went back to Davis to take courses on winemaking that what they were teaching in the books was not what they were doing at the winery. So it's like, okay, wait a second. There's a million ways to do this thing. I want to try to learn most of them by the time I'm finished with my career, because I want to be able to hand this off to my kids and say, oh, this reminds me, because I love these old guys. When I was at these wineries, they're like, this reminds me of like 1983 when the rain came in and what happened, what we did to get extra flavor. And this was cool to me, right? So I wanted to learn all these little extra goodies. So I have forced myself every year to try new things, read about new things, try new techniques, try all these variations, and maybe not use them all the time, but I've learned over the years now that they have helped. Yeah, I know you've seen the old French upright tanks, the giant casks. Wineries have them, you know, before there was stainless steel, before they used wood, right, to ferment in. Wood swells up and becomes watertight, as obviously barrels and whiskey and rum and everything you've seen. There's concrete as well. You know, wines have been made for hundreds of years in concrete in the ground. So wood actually does things. We age wine in wood because it softens. The tannic acid that's in the barrel does many things. The breathing, the chemical evolution that happens due to the breathability of a barrel helps a lot of chemical reactions occur. The wood itself has many flavors that get imparted into the wine, including help to fix the color, keep a color stable due to the acidity in the wood. So wood has many, many great functions for a wine. And one that I think is not talked about a lot is during the actual making of the wine itself. During that 2 to 3 week period, to actually have that wood integrate into the chemical reactions that are going on during fermentation is really wonderful and is oftentimes overlooked. And a lot of times it's overlooked because stainless steel is very easy to clean. It never goes away. You can reuse it for over and over and over and over. But again, that one of those little tiny things that I like to do, again, attention to detail, things that some people will notice. I started noticing some of the home winemaking competitions that these guys, out of necessity, really didn't have tanks and didn't have all the cool stuff that we have. Their wines were really good. And you know why? Because they were fermenting in their barrels. So some of us started to take note of that and started to make wines in smaller vessels. So we started to take these new French barrels that we're standing next to, these 60-gallon, 225-liter barrels, take the head off the barrel, turn it on its side like a garbage can, so it looks like basically like an oil drum standing on its side, and we put the grapes straight into these. We fermented straight into these, hand-stirring every one of them, because the amount of wood touching the grapes in a smaller vessel, so basically wood-to-juice ratio, is much more concentrated than the amount of juice that would touch the walls in a giant tank. So that started to create richer, softer flavors because of the wood helping integrate. And every one of these, if you can imagine 200 of these barrels lined up across the room here, every one of them is going to ferment differently. They're all individual little separate batches. The temperature they get to, the yeast, how it interacts, all will have, even though it's the same grape, will have a little different character. So imagine marrying all 200 of those unique little flavors together. It's just not the same as a giant stainless steel tank. So that right there was winning. Now somebody took this cool idea. These are called pearls. So these are some barrels where someone actually designed them so you didn't have to physically take them apart. They've got a head on top that you can remove. These come off so we can actually work on the wine and stir it through the top. But the reason it's truncated is as a grape dissolves and falls apart, and which happens as it breaks down, the juice falls out of the grape, and guess what? The skin then is laying there floating around. The pulp starts to dissolve, so you get a bunch of mush. Well, the process of fermentation is where yeast eats sugar, and they get carbon dioxide and alcohol as their byproducts. Well, that carbon dioxide pushes those light, thin skins to the surface and form what's called a cap. The cap is on the top, and our job every day during fermentation is to stir those skins back in, because we want to extract a lot of those flavors and things out of the skins. The skins for red wines and the pulp are really where all of the character of the wine is. These were invented to keep those skins always in the juice, because if it's truncated like this, even though it's trying to push up, the fact that it gets narrower keeps it from popping up out of the juice. So you get more skin contact without us having to push it down. So the part of the cap is always submersed, and you just get a little more skin to juice working of the wine on these. For me, with these barrels, this cooperage only makes 15 of these for the world every year. So they close their cooperage down in France for 2 weeks because this is a whole handmade certain process. And we got three of these, and I love the look of them. So we actually turned them into a little more of a showpiece for our three top high-end wines to allow people to sort of like soft ice cream self-serve. We let them walk right up and do some barrel tastings out of these. So we built some really beautiful custom stands out of stainless steel and let people come just get involved, get back here and taste themselves and do barrel casings out of these. You know, we all want to get behind the velvet rope. Everybody wants a backstage pass to the band, right? They want to see what the band's doing in the changing room before they go on. We really want people to feel and get involved here, and that's part of this process. Although we do have to be a little careful because the old method is like what's sitting right here is called a thief. And where we have this little tube that we put into the barrel that looks like a turkey baster, and we will basically suck a little wine up in that tube and then put it in the glass. And it's called a thief because we are stealing wine from the barrel. That's really why it's called that. But every time you open that bung and every time you stick that thing down inside there, you're opening up a can of worms, if you will, a reason for bacteria to get in there, contaminate. And so when you look around here at all these barrels thinking anyone could go over and open a bung anytime and just leave it out. So we've had issues in the past. So this is a good way to let people still be involved, but we are not taking the bungs out every single time. We have a valve to taste out of.
Enter the winemaker.
Well, I'm the winemaker assistant. My name is Arturo Irukuta.
Okay, and you're the assistant winemaker. Who's the winemaker then?
Steve is the winemaker.
Well, really, it's the Milli Vanilli thing. He's really the winemaker. I'm just the Great Wizard of Oz behind the curtain, but he does all the hard work.
Arturo started as a field worker in Mexico. 26 years ago, he decided to follow his passion.
It's a big challenge, but it's a really nice one. Because that's a good challenge to find the right components you're going to use and the right percentage. And that changed every year. So we can make the same flavor of the wines every year, but the percentage is going to be different. To me, it's more fun. It's always something different. Even if you do same blend or same bottling, it's always different challenge. Especially on the blend, every vintage is different. Then you got to get different components to get the right blend. Even if you know what will be the percentage in the previous year, the flavor is not going to be the same. So you got to change different percentage so you can get the same flavor on the wine.
We open the big cellar door and walk out into one of the estate vineyards behind the winery.
This is the estate, so we only have Cabernet Sauvignon, Clone 337, and also Weimer, Clone 4. So when they planted, they decided to do that because the Clone 4 is a really nice clone for blend. So they planted in the same spot, so that way we can blend as soon as we harvest. The blending happens right in the tank when we start fermenting. Most of the winemakers, they keep the clones separate so they can make the blends later. But in this case, when they plant these vineyards, they decided to plant them together so that way they can grow together and they can get everything treated the same. Plus, when you harvest them, you combine them right away. So in reality, we got 80% of the whole vineyard is 337 clone, 10% is Weimer, and the other 10% is clone 4. We have some kind of rocky soil right in the middle of the vineyards. The thing I haven't understand yet is why every 20 or 50 feet the soil is different. We got 4 different soils here, but they're not in one spot. So you got one type of soil here, a couple feet later you got another different soil, but like another 200 feet, that's the same soil it was in the beginning. So it's a really good combination. And the soil we got is kind of mix of the rocky soil with some of the clay in the back, and also some of the really nice red soil, as you can see here in the front. And those combinations help us to get a really good flavor on the wine. So the wine we grow here is the state, and flavor profile, it's really good because I don't know how that happened, but we got some kind of tobacco and chocolate flavor in the wine without adding any new oak or anything else to change the flavor. It's just by itself. We can compare the new barrels versus the neutral barrels, and flavor-wise, both of them are close the same. And also on the neutral barrels, the chocolate flavor stands more on the wine. So that's what we like about this place here.
I like to thank and really kind of spread the word, if you will, as I travel, that I feel the true winemakers in California particularly are all these guys from Mexico that work so hard. You kind of seen my team. They're almost all Hispanic. They work so hard, and I think a lot of times they don't get the tribute or the credit for doing this. Well, you hear, I mean, Arturo and all these guys, we're all the winemakers here. So not only was it kind of fun to do, but when Arturo said, drink some tequila, you'll speak much better. So I took that to heart, and as I started to get out and do these different wine dinners, I had everybody join me for a little toast of tequila to honor them, and it's become this ritual.
Come and taste your way through the wines at Reynolds Family Winery and see if you can detect layers of chocolate and tobacco. And if you're lucky, you'll find yourself at a wine dinner raising a glass in honor of those who made it all possible. Forks and Corks is a production of Napa Valley Life magazine. Visit our website at NapaValleyLifeMagazine.com to delve deep into the culture of the Napa Valley. While you're there, you can also find show notes for this episode, as well as find more delectable food and wine.